You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with your host, James Creviston.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James. And today I have a great person with me. This guy writes news jokes, topical jokes. He does stand up. He is all over the place. In fact, he was recommended to me by the show favorite, Paul Douglas Moomjean. So, Paul, thank you very much. And you guys can go shout out Paul and say hi to Paul and say thanks, Paul, for getting this guest to come on. Yeah, thanks, Paul. So today, let me introduce my guest, Mr. John Lonis. John, welcome.
Thank you so much. You know, before I get started, whenever I do an interview, I just like to have some nice Red Bull energy drink right there.
And I have a Celsius, so we're living at large here. This is, in case you guys don't know, this is what comedians live on, is energy drinks.
It's Red Bull. It's Red Bull. It's this brand. Otherwise, I don't get paid.
Oh, sorry. It's Red Bull, guys. It's Red Bull. I'm going to slip over here like this now. Well, welcome to the podcast, John. Paul recommended you. I was working on a project. I can't really say too much about it, but it was a news-themed project, and your name came up. He said you're amazing at it. I read and reviewed some of your stuff. I was also impressed. Sadly, it didn't work out. I didn't get John aboard, which breaks my heart a little bit because he's a genius. But I want to kind of get your background, your origin story, all that kind of stuff, how you got into comedy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll you speed me along if it's getting too arduous, but I'm relatively new. You know, I guess like I wanted to be a writer like as far back as I can remember, and then I just waited like 30 plus years to attempt it in any regard. So I probably did my first open mic in like 2019, maybe 2018, but I think 2019.
Okay.
And then I still wasn't like, but it was writing in the sense that I was writing jokes, right? And I was saying them. So stand-up was the first thing that started to like gain momentum sort of. And then I took some classes, and then at the end of 2019, some friends and I started running a show. And that's when, that was a big step up. Cause first, you know, you can get stage time consistently. And then I was also meeting people that way. And getting booked. And then of course there's the pandemic. So, I wasn't, some people were like, I'm not doing Zoom. And I think it's important to adjust, you know, but at the same time I was like, well, what I've always really wanted to do is write. I've still never written anything. I'm stuck at home. If I don't start to write now, then obviously it's never gonna happen, right? So that's when, I'm still really working on that primarily, like writing narrative stuff, but also late night stuff, which is, I mean, that's how I would describe like the news type jokes, late night things. So that's been a main thing I've, been working towards, trying to submit packets for late night and stuff like that.
That's awesome. And you do have your own like show that you do like every week to do that. So you write your own jokes and then perform them, right? Am I wrong with that?
Well, I've been writing for Adam Yenser's show, which is called Canceled News. He headlines around, and he wrote for Ellen for like 10 years and stuff. So he's got his show that I've been writing for. But I should get back to producing more of my own content, because that's kind of necessary.
Yeah, I mean, there was a comedian that I worked with, Jonas Polsky, who used to do jokes of the day, and he would do like five news story jokes that he would do every day, and he would release mm-hmm. them as a podcast, and it was amazing. And he's a fantastic writer, and I worked with him for a long time on other projects. I brought him on because somehow I keep getting roped into helping produce other people's stuff too. That's probably what you're experiencing as well. Mm-hmm. And so I seek out. I'm going to tell everybody the honest truth. I am not the funniest person in the room. I'm not the smartest person in the room. I seek out people better than me, funnier, smarter, wiser, all across the board, so that I can put together the best thing possible. That's my entire goal. So I came across Jonas and like that, and then I had someone else reach out to me to help produce a podcast. So I got in touch with you. That's important. The fact that you're keeping that skill up and writing your own stuff, and then also helping with this other show, Canceled News, is that's amazing, man. So congratulations to you. So is that on a specific channel, or is it a podcast, or what is it?
On YouTube, yeah, he puts it on
It's on YouTube.
YouTube.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
You know, when you talk about not being the smartest kid in the room, I think it's important also to remember, like, there's different skills you can
Yes.
have. So it's also important to find people who complement you. Like when I was running that show, I've got this friend, Vinayak Pal, who his dry bar thing just came out a few days ago.
Oh, awesome.
And like we're very different people, but I think that's kind of what's great about our friendship and our, you know, short-lived comedy partnership. As he's a much more outgoing. If you want to produce a show and you're like me with terrible, I hate to use the phrase social anxiety, it's like a buzzword, but you know,
Right.
that's not my thing, is like talking to people. Find yourself an extrovert friend. That's really the way to go.
That, I mean, literally, anyone who's paid attention to this podcast or watched before knows that my old co-host Luke LaCoy is that person. He's very shy. He's very introverted. He's very smart. He's the complete opposite of me. And we work well together because we complement each other, right? Because there's a lot of times where Luke would say to me, there's few people in the world that can come to me and say, James, this is not a good idea, right? My wife is one of them. My grandmother or whatever. But Luke is one of, and David Studebaker and Paul Muljean. So maybe a dozen people in the world. Everyone else I'll tell
I'm gonna
get
keep
better.
trying, but you know, you're not close. I'm gonna keep telling you it's
Yeah,
not a good idea, but.
it might become you. Yeah, but so Luke would tell me stuff like that, and we had a great partnership because of it, and we grew well because we both complement each other. So I get where you're coming from there.
Isn't that great when like you can trust someone to like tell you should rethink someone? Like that's such a satisfying thing when you actually are like, oh, I should do this differently.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just had that experience. I don't know if you got to listen to the Alaska episode, but we went to Alaska. David Studebaker and I went to Alaska. We did two shows. One show was at like a rowdy kind of bar type place. It wasn't rowdy, right? But it was more of a bar themed kind of show and very laid back, not a club or anything. Very cool. And I had a hard time. I struggled with that show. They like me, then they hate me. Then they like me, then they hate me. And my material is not material that should be upsetting anyone ever, but for some reason it didn't work out. I went to the next show the next day at a church and blew it out of the water. No ifs, ands, or buts. And I did the same material, minus one joke, but I did the same material, no problems. So it was just a weird thing of, but on the drive to the second show, Dave was like, "Hey, you need to get out of your own head right now, because I know what you're doing. You're gonna psych yourself out. You're gonna get to that show. You're gonna bomb again, and then you're gonna get on the plane and you're gonna go, I should never do stand up again. I should just quit. No one should ever hire me. I'm an idiot. I'm terrible." And that's a true friend that will like call you out on your BS. And he could see it as I'm driving, because I've just got like, do you know that time where you drive and you like white knuckle because you're thinking about something that's terrible, and you just like white knuckle and you're kind of like zoned out, and just like. You're like rethinking your entire existence. Have you ever had that drive?
Absolutely.
I'm doing that. And he goes, "Hey man, are you okay?" And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. And he's like, "No, you're not. You're not okay at all." Like, and then, he called me out, and then the show went great. So I think had I not had a good friend there to call me on that, I probably would have bombed that second show too, because I was so inside my head that I just could not get out of it. Now, good.
I was just gonna say, is that your like go-to way of getting upset is like self-doubt? Because I think a lot of comedians have, you know, it's funny because like I am not like I don't present myself as a confident person, but which is maybe even worse than self-doubt is I'd be driving and being like, those people are idiots, you know, that which is also not the way to go.
I came up in stand up being told the crowd is right, you're wrong. Like the like you can't blame the crowd. That's it's if you do bad, it's on you 100%, right? Now there are always exceptions to the rules, right? If there's like a rowdy crowd and they're not listening to you at all, then obviously that's the crowd, right? You can't do anything about that. But if a crowd is paying attention to you're doing your stand up, and it's not responsive, or it's not going well, or they don't like you, that's on you. You need to figure that out. So I don't think I've ever blamed the crowd, to be honest with you. I didn't blame the crowd for that, and it was 100% my fault. But yeah, I do get to the doubt. I get to the doubt stage when I work on a project for somebody and I go to hit the send button to send them the project, and I go, oh man, they're gonna know that I suck at this, that I'm terrible. I've written If I went and looked, I've written over 1,000 different projects, from everything from, you know, 5 random jokes to entire 120-page screenplays, right? And the gamut of everything in between. But there is always that moment of self-doubt where I go, I'm a fraud. They're going to figure out I'm a fraud. I'm terrible. Like, they're going to know I am nothing. I'm just telling people I'm a comedian and I'm not really a comedian. That is, I don't know if you ever have that, but I have that quite a bit.
Sure. Yeah, I think everyone, has that to some extent. I think a little bit of that is healthy. It's just like, you know, we're in, like, I think we're there. And then as a society now, like, you go on Instagram and it's all like, you can do anything sort of stuff. Also, I think it's good to pull that back a little bit. You know, like, it's good to have enough doubt where you're not just spewing things out there constantly.
That's true. And I think I do swing the other way of, like, being too cautious and too fearful and too concerned and too worried, you know, like, I don't know what it is. I don't know. I mean, Sam Bear kind of profiled me a little bit. She's like, you're the one white guy I know that's not confident about being a white guy out in the world. And I was like, yeah, I'm not. I'm just not. It's just not who I am. So I'm not like, hey, everybody, look out for the white guy. I'm coming to take over everything. Like, I don't do that type thing. So it's pretty funny when she called me out on it. But
We'll get along great. I think we'll get along in common in that sense.
So you said you started later on. I started around around my 35th birthday. You started later on. What made you push into comedy? Like, what happened? There's usually some inciting incident of this. I need to do this because X, Y, and Z. Mine was because I'm about to hit 35. It's on my bucket list. I've never done it, and I want to give stand-up a shot. That was literally my idea behind it.
Yeah, I think it was like a very, very slow burn sort of thing. And I think it was kind of out of necessity. Like, that was at a point when I was pretty depressed, and also it just felt like I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I think with a lot of things, it's like, I know what I want to do, and then I'll second guess it, and then I'll eventually come back around. And I think that's what it was. It's like, I knew I wanted to do something like this. I tried everything else. And then 30 years later, it was like almost like an act of desperation where I wound up at an open mic, which is a very desperate place to be.
100%.
And the first time I went up, you know, obviously it was terrible, but right away I was like, I want to get back up, you know?
Yeah.
Before that, I'd gotten really into podcasts, and I had a friend, I had no money at this point, and I had a friend who's a musician who was just throwing away this USB mic. And I was like, oh, can I have that? So then I just started recording. I downloaded Audacity, like a free sound editing thing, and just started experimenting. The very first thing I did was I called it a podio book. So I recorded like an audio book of Catcher in the Rye, but with like stream of consciousness, like jokes as I came up with them, or just like random thoughts. And just the act of talking into a microphone, I think, was the first step towards getting on stage and talking into a microphone.
That's amazing. Is that still out there somewhere? I would love to hear that, because Catcher in the Rye is a hard book to make funny, by the way. That's not an easy book to make funny.
I should put it back up. YouTube did take it down. Free use stuff.
Yeah.
It gets very tricky, because like, they're going to err on the side of taking something down.
Of course.
And then it was like, well, am I going to go to court with the estate of whatever his name is, you know, or
JD Salinger.
Yeah. Actually, I remember when I got a notice, and it was funny because he was deceased, but it didn't say like from the estate of JD Salinger. It said just from JD Salinger. I was like, wow, he's really coming after me. He's coming from beyond the grave to take this down.
That's a boss level writer right there. He's just like, yes, even when I'm dead, I'm coming for you. You're like, okay,
this is
right.
The one thing I did. Don't mess with it.
That's pretty awesome, because I love books that are like parody books, like Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and like those sell a lot of those things that people remade. So I figured that would be a very entertaining, funny thing to do. Now, obviously, you are well above me in that level of intelligence that you could do that, because I wouldn't be able to do anything like that. So that's, to me, is super impressive. But you also have a degree, I think, from like UC Santa Barbara in like film and television studies. Is that right? Something like that?
It's in psychology, actually. I did study film there, and then I switched just because psychology was an easier major for me to finish.
So did you ever work in the psychology field at all? Like, did you work as like a therapist or any things like that?
No, it was just the thing that at the time was really interesting to me. And frankly, it was just what came easier to me and allowed me to finish. Otherwise, I might not have graduated. So,
yeah, you know what? I've got to say this to you, and I don't know if this will work for you. If you ever need a job or career or something that's not in stand up or comedy, you should just get your therapy degree and just target comedians for therapy. And then you could be like a therapist and comedy coach at the same time. They talk about their stuff, and then you help them work it out into material, and then they take it to the stage, and then it's like, dude, you're doing both. I don't know.
It's not a bad idea. I do talk about my therapy sometimes on, well, I'm not in it. I know this is clean. I'm not going to go blue at all. It's a little dark. You can skip over, but I was in therapy. One of my big things is like, I have a fear of death. But I haven't been to therapy in a couple years because my therapist killed himself. So that was, I mean, you have to talk about that. You know, it's just one of those things. It's too weird to, you know, not talk about.
No,
I don't remember how we got there, but anyway.
It was good. No, because we're talking about your degree and stuff. That's perfectly fine. So you've been doing that. Do you write anything else? You write like screenplays, television stuff like that? Like what's your goal, and what do you want to do with comedy? Because a lot of comedians, you know, I talk to a lot of comedians, not at our level, usually where we're doing a lot more shows or we're writing for other people, but are starting out and they go, I want to be famous like Kevin Hart. And you're like, okay, well, that's like saying, starting at Pee Wee football and saying, I want to play in the NFL. Like, there's a lot of steps to get to that level, and it's not easy. And a small percentage of people get to Kevin Hart, Dave Chappelle, Jerry Seinfeld, whatever levels that you want to be at. Most of us are going to end up middling, maybe headlining locally, maybe also doing some road stuff. And if you're getting, you know, a dry bar special or a Netflix special, yes, it can boost you, but that's not even guaranteed for you to be, you know, headlining around the country as well either. So that doesn't, I mean, it's not as big as it could be, but dry bar does help. So you said you had a friend that had dry bar. Paul Moomjean has a dry bar. My buddy David Studebaker's dry bar is coming out this year sometime. So I know plenty of people are doing it, and they are getting a lot of work out of it. Where do you see yourself, or what would be your ideal career like for you as a comedian or as a comedy writer or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I think I am more of a writer than a performer. I love performing stand-up, but as far as career-wise, what I would like to do in the near future is land a writing job. That's the main thing I have my sights set on. And I've been doing a lot of stuff working on, you know, like narrative writing, but also the late night stuff has been actually, you know, people often have things to plug. Here's what I'm going to plug. It's not an actual, project, but I'll just say one thing I've been trying to, so, you know, it's not like they post things on LinkedIn when they have an opening for a show or whatever, right. But with late night stuff, it's a little bit more like that, which is they'll, you know, have like an opening and there'll be a packet, like, and it's semi-public information, right? Like they do accept packets from people, but it's sort of like the information seeps out through comedians, right? So you have to know someone and then they know someone at the show or whatever. So what I've been, and it's hard to find out, like I think I've done like 5 packets in the past 2 years, and but they all, like 4 of them were in the first year, like in 2020, you know, mid 2020 to mid 2021. And then the past year, I've only heard about 1. So what I've been trying to do is anyone who's interested in late night writing, I'm trying to have like a group of people where we all agree to share if we hear about something. Because, you know, there is this thing where we, you know, you kind of want to keep the information to yourself too, because you're like, I don't want other people to get this job. But really, it's like the only way you wouldn't benefit from telling someone is if not only did they get hired, but you were specifically the second in line, you know, because if you were third, then it doesn't matter that they get the job anyway, you know, and the odds that it works out that specific way are pretty astronomical. So anyway, you can find me, John Don Lonis, on Instagram. Why Am I So Sleepy on Twitter. If you want to join my little late night consortium, you can message. I almost said you can hit me up, but just message me. Like, you know, I don't want to use the, whatever you do, don't slide into my DMs. Like,
I apologize. I apologize. I did slide into your DMs. That was, I was told I was allowed to.
No, I think you walked jauntily in there. You know?
Yeah, that's awesome. And so you like more news-based comedy, more topical comedy, that kind of stuff. That's your thing that you're into.
Yeah, I'd say it's equal, like late night and like narrative stuff. But I like the late night genre. I don't really like, you know, it's funny that you said like Paul's looking for a political writer. I don't like politics per se, but it is a great, I mean, it's always new. So it's just a great way to do comedy. It's constant material. Yeah. So yeah, I do, but I haven't been watching those shows as much. I like the HBO ones. I like Bill Maher and John Oliver, but it's not as good as when we were kids, you know, Letterman and those guys. It just was different. I enjoyed it a lot more.
I miss Johnny Carson. I miss the you know, the letter on the envelope and then saying the joke. I miss all that stuff. It feels like we've elevated, comedy's been elevated, but also at the same time, it's more tense than it's ever been, especially in that realm of topical, political, news, satire, whatever you want to do. Even like, you know, when we have The Onion, The Babylon Bee, like all these other satirical news things as well as regular news, it feels like we're inundated with that stuff, which is why I was hesitant to work on this project at first that I'm helping produce and work on and write or whatever. But it just, I was like, you know what? Why not? I mean, everybody's doing it. There's money to be made here for me to write jokes. One, it's going to make me write jokes every week and work on stuff, work on material and help do things. And so I was like, all right, fine. I'll do it. And it's been great. Actually, it was been more fun than I thought it was going to be. At first, I thought it was going to be a slog, and it has not been. It's been very fun. It's been very interesting. I've learned a ton, and I've learned that I am, again, I'm not the funniest person in the room. And that's always a good experience, and it's a good humbling experience, because sometimes we go, I'm the best, I'm super funny. Like, sometimes we get that little moment of like, yeah, I'm awesome, because somebody's like, oh, your joke's hilarious. I'm like, I'm awesome, I'm the best, I know everything. And then like the next day, next week, next mic, whatever it is, you get humbled and you're like, all right, I gotta remember that. Don't get a big head. So
comedy is great for keeping you humble,
it is.
For the other way, but you know, it goes back and forth constantly.
If you could write a TV show, like a standard like television series, not like late night, but something that's like a series or narrative style, whatever, what things do you like, and what would you want to write, or what would you, do you have something in mind?
Yeah, that's interesting. It's something I've kind of been asking myself a lot. I've been taking these I just like to give credit for, you know, the people who've taught me things. So I've been taking these classes from this guy Corey Mandel. He's got some great screenwriting classes, not comedy specific. So that's been challenging me to like write things that aren't comedy, which is good, because sometimes we tend to lean into our strengths, you know. Yeah. And I think it's causing me to explore other things. But well, also we talked a little bit over email about horrors, the genre I always loved. But I have a pilot that I wrote about my experience working in veterinary medicine. So that's something cool that I've put on the shelf for now. But yeah, I would love to be the writer's room itself. You know, I watch more films than TV, but I would love to work in TV, because that idea of just being in a room with a bunch of people pitching ideas back and forth, like that just sounds like the coolest way to get, you know, to have a job.
Yeah. I was lucky enough when I first started doing comedy and stuff that I was able to get hired to write a web series for Facebook Watch when Facebook Watch was trying to become a thing. And I was lucky enough to go in and work with Wampa Zarita, who he's now on HBO as like a cooking show. But we wrote a show called Abracadabra, and it was me and him in this room on a Saturday afternoon coming up with, like, I think it was like 8 episodes of this web series and doing it all together in one afternoon. And it was fun because we kept bouncing ideas off each other and add jokes and all this stuff. And I was thinking, man, how awesome would this be if there was like 6 of us in here or 8 of us in here doing this same kind of thing? And that's my dream too, is I would love to. My dream is actually to work in the Simpsons writer's room. That for me would be my dream job. Talk Simpsons, make Simpsons jokes, write Bart lines, write Homer lines, make silly things, make fun of pop culture. Like, that would be the dream for me, 100%. But I don't know if that'll ever happen. That's my favorite show of all time. I've watched every episode multiple times. It is, I refer to it quite often, way too much in my household, but it's definitely something I love.
The Simpsons is one of those classic like writer's rooms. Like that's the peak of the peak. The very first writing class I took, I'm blanking on his name. Maybe you can edit it in. I think it's Brett. I want to say Brett Easton Ellis. That's the American Psycho guy. Yes. Definitely not him. But anyway, so he wrote for The Simpsons and a bunch of other shows, and he did it.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Hold on. We're going to find it. You keep talking. I'm going to find it because I know.
So that was one of the first big shows he wrote for, and he was given this class through Dynasty Typewriter in 2020, and he talked about how...
Brent Forrester?
Yes, Brent Forrester. And he does classes, which I would recommend to everyone. Okay. And he talked about how intimidating it was. He came in, I think, season 4. And it's all like Harvard guy, like these comedy geniuses. And it was him and another guy who came in at the same time. And it was so intimidating to pitch any jokes. So you get hired at like usually like 10 weeks at a time. And the other guy never once pitched a single thing. And then at 10 weeks, his contract was up and they didn't renew it, obviously. But this is like an accomplished comedian writer. And he just couldn't muster up the courage to say anything in front of the Simpsons room.
Dude, I would be pitching. The first day, I'd be probably quiet and laugh or whatever. And then the second day, I would be pitching like my life depended on it. Because yeah. I would want to stay in that room forever and ever and ever and ever. And I would never want to leave. They would literally have to force me out of like gunpoint with like a SWAT team to get out of that room. Cause once I was in this writer's room for The Simpsons, I would never leave ever. Like, I don't care. I wouldn't care if I got Conan's job, right? Conan was,
yeah.
If I don't care if I got Conan's job, I would stay in that room. I'd be like, listen, I appreciate it. You guys are awesome. Thanks for trying to give me a TV show. I don't want to do it. I want to write The Simpsons forever. Now, when you cancel the show, then we'll talk. Until then, I want to stay there. So.
Yeah, maybe like I can do my own show sometimes on like Saturdays or something, but
that'd be a good idea.
My main thing.
Yeah. That might be, you know what? I like where you're at. See, I'm going to get you to help me because I'm going to like, hey, John, what do I do here? I need to know what you would do. You're like, yeah. Just tell them Saturday show or something. And then write The Simpsons the rest of the week. I'm like, you got it. You know,
the cool thing, you're talking about being intimidated by stuff like that. What I've really found, because I also was talking before about like, you know, being self-conscious and whatnot, but when you find something that really you're just genuinely interested in, that's a great way to get over that. Like, I mentioned like social anxiety and whatnot, but when we were running our show, my friend and I saw Eddie Pepitone, who's like one of my absolute favorite stand-ups. We saw him at the Improv, and then we just went up and we're like, you're great, do you want to do our show? And he did our show, and that was such a cool experience to learn. Like, I'm not as intimidated if it's talking about something that I really love, like comedy. Mm-hmm. Like, I can talk to other comedians just because, like, I'm interested enough where it gets past whatever anxieties, you know, and you're more enjoying it than you are scared of it at that point.
That's true. So what advice would you give someone who's starting comedy now? Like, if somebody came up to you and said, hey, John, I want to be a comedian, what advice would you give them? What would you tell them? Or what would you even tell your younger self starting out in comedy?
Definitely just like start doing it. Don't over plan, which is something I would tell my current self and probably my future self as well. But just start trying things. Just be moving forward. You know, it's totally okay. In fact, it's inevitable that stuff won't work. But that's how you figure, that's something that you have to get through. You know, when something doesn't work, we think like, oh, I could have saved time by not doing that. But just as a thought exercise, if nothing else, it's helpful to think like, well, this is like a straight line. That was a thing that I had to get over no matter what to keep going, you know? So if you look at it as just a pathway where that was an obstacle no matter what, I think it helps you be like, yeah, that wasn't wasted time. So just keep moving forward, basically, and find the things that you... that inspire you, you know, that are the things like when I was talking about talking to Eddie Pepitone, like find the aspects that you like enough that it's gonna just inherently keep you interested in it without some sort of extra motivation.
And that's true because comedy, you're right. Comedy's going to have points of plateaus where, like, you're going to be doing good and then it's going to kind of stay level for a minute and then it'll go back up. And then you'll stay level for a minute and then you'll go back up. And it'll constantly be doing that. But in those plateau moments, you need to be moving forward. You can't be like, okay, well, this is as far as I'm going to get, right? That's like if you're climbing Everest, you make it to the base camp one and you're like, well, I made it this far. I could say I went to Everest and climbed on Everest, right? I can walk around. You can logically walk away saying that. But did you really climb Everest? Did you really go? Did you really do Everest? No, you climbed to base camp one, hung out, and then went home. Like, that's not okay. Like, if you want to keep progressing, if you want to say, I did it, you have to keep working at it. Now, there's a lot of comedians that I've met out in the world that are okay with just doing open mics every week and never getting on shows and never progressing and never trying to do anything else. That's their quote unquote hobby. I would not want to make comedy my quote unquote hobby. I think that would be a very difficult hobby. I'd rather go back to doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu and getting punched in the face doing MMA 100% because it's way easier. Like, I can deal with that. But comedy is not, to me, doesn't feel like a hobby. It feels like either a calling or a career, one of those two things, or both for some people. So
I find it so inspiring when I see something like, the example that comes to mind is Kristen Schaal, you know, who's really big now. She's on Bob's Burgers and whatnot. And I'm blanking on her comedy partner's name, so I apologize to him if he's watching. But, you know, they do their show at the Virgil, I think it's Mondays, and they've been doing it forever. And it's like before they were big, and then now she's big. She doesn't need to do this show for $5 a head or whatever, you know. Yeah. But I think it's so cool every week when I see, like, that's just her thing, you know, whether the career's on top or not, she's going to keep doing that thing because that's what she enjoys. Also, it's okay to sort of artificially push yourself to enjoy something a little bit sometimes. Like, nothing, I think this is Maria Bamford said this one time. She's like, you know, we talk about like it's a dream job, but just to tell you guys in the audience, like, I didn't want to be here tonight, really. You know, like, it's also okay to find the thing that you like the most, but that doesn't mean every day you're going to jump out of bed and be like, I cannot wait to do this. You know, it's still real life. So that's okay too.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to put in work. Comedy isn't like, hey guys, it's all funny all the time. There's a lot of stuff that you have to go and do. I mean, like Jerry Seinfeld's latest special is called 23 Hours to Kill. The reason that it's called that is because 1 hour of the day, you're doing stand-up or you're at a club or you're doing your show or whatever it is, and the rest of the time, it's preparing, writing, rewriting, listening to yourself, having meetings, coming up with other stuff. You know, there's 23 hours of the day is not you doing stand-up. No one's doing it 24 hours a day. It's not easy. And then sometimes, especially if you live in L.A. or you live in places where the sun is nice, right? I have a pool in my backyard. There are nights where I'm like, I don't want to go anywhere. I can go chill in my hot tub and look at the stars and not have to worry about going on stage or driving an hour to Burbank or Hollywood or whatever, waiting in traffic, paying for parking, having to buy one or two drinks. And then, you know, like there's a lot of other pieces that go into that I could go, I don't want to do that. That happens a lot to a lot of comedians, especially the more famous you get, the more it's like, I have comfort. I have stability. If I don't have to go out, I don't want to go out, you know? And Judd Apatow was the same way. Like, he started writing more. He started stand-up. He started writing more. He got more writing gigs. He stopped doing stand-up. His wife didn't even know he had done stand-up previously. Mm-hmm. Like, she's like, when he went back to it, she was like, wait, why are you doing this? Like, what's going on? Is this like a midlife crisis thing? Are you going to get like a car and start dating 21-year-olds? What's going on? You know, like she weirded out. And he's like, no, I used to do stand up. She's like, you did? And he's like, yeah, I did. Like, she didn't know, right? Because he had provided stability. He went away from it. And he said it was hard to come back and do stand up because he hadn't done it for so long. He got comfortable and then he wasn't planning on doing it again, but he did it. And so just know there, like you said, it's not every day of jumping out of bed like, woo, comedy, baby. Like, it's not like that. That's not how it works. So I appreciate that you recognize it and that other people should recognize that as well.
That's definitely something with the late night stuff that I think has made me into a much better writer. Maybe because I said, like, I don't love the politics angle that much. But like, so you have just a topic, you know, in stand-up, you can talk about the things you want to talk about, right? But if you have to write jokes about the news, you have to figure out what's funny about this. And I think that type of writing has, whether it's stand-up or whatever, like my joke writing in general has gotten so much stronger by having to write jokes about things that aren't inherently funny.
Right. Now, have you ever checked out Comedy Wire, comedywire.com?
Yeah, I did. I used to do Comedy Wire a lot. Yeah,
I used to do too. Yeah, Luke and I used to do it all the time. It really helped me work my muscle to write jokes, topical news jokes or whatever. And so any of you guys who are interested in topical joke writing and news writing, go check out comedywire.com. I've had some people on there from Comedy Wire. We were lucky enough that when it was owned by Funny or Die and stuff, that we've been able to do that. And then there was the other thing that was owned by Funny or Die. What was it called? It was an app where you could submit jokes like that too.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. I got there too late, but I know what you're talking about.
But we were, Luke and I were lucky enough that when that was still existed, why am I forgetting the name? I apologize. When it existed, we got to go to a big party at Funny or Die in LA and do that live. It was just so much fun. So write jokes because it will pay off. You will find a way to use them, even if you don't want to be a stand-up comedian. There's plenty of ways to use it to be a speech writer or a book writer or a million other things. People love comedy. Wedding speeches. I've been hired to write more wedding speeches than I can even tell you because people want to be funny at the wedding speech. And if TV's taught us anything, that's the best speeches, right? If we've ever watched a movie, those are always the best speeches. So, John, is there anything else you want to plug before we go?
I mentioned teachers. I should say this. If you're interested in late night stuff, Gabe Abelson's got a great class at Flappers, and then Jerry Corley is a great teacher for late night stuff and stand up. He's the first person I found, and he's been my main person I've taken classes from.
Yeah, Jerry's awesome.
Can you tell me a little about how you got into the horror thing? How you find that different from comedy?
Oh yeah, sure. Okay, so. I have been hired to write everything from like thrillers to action to horror, whatever. I like horror movie. I grew up on horror movies. So for me, that's a very big, easy thing to get into. But I kind of shied away from it because I want to write comedy. But one of my friends, their manager wants a horror movie. And she's also a producer. And so I've been working with her on writing a horror movie, and I pitched her a bunch of different ideas, and she's seen some of my other writing work. So she knows I can do stuff, but she's like, would you be interested? I know you write mostly comedy. I said, look, if we've learned anything from Jordan Peele, it's if you can write comedy, you can write horror. And the reason for that is a jump scare is the same as a punchline. It's just the opposite way of doing it. Right. So, when you watch Stranger Things, the tension's built like it's a joke. What's coming? What are they going to do? What are they about to say? And then boom, jump scare. And now you're in, now you're here. It's the same thing. It's just a joke with usually more of a physical outburst as opposed to a punchline word. So I always say comedy and horror are the flip side of each other. You know, one's heads, one's tails. And it's true. If you go and look at the structure of a horror movie and the structure of a comedy movie, they all have the same pieces. They just one, instead of writing a joke in that scene, you're writing a scary moment in that scene. That's why Scream is honestly one of the most perfect horror movies of all time, because it incorporates both pieces of those things to give you one of the best classic horror movies of all time. Like it's unbeatable. You cannot beat Scream. That is, to me, one of the most iconic horror movies, not only of all time, but definitely of our generation. Now, my favorite horror movie of all time is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I love it. It's my favorite. I watch it a million times. It doesn't bother me. I think it's fantastic. Structurally sound, great film. Now, the remake that just came out, terrible. I hated it. I hated every part of it. They didn't set it up right. There was not a redeeming moment for any of it. Your protagonists have to be redeemed. There was no redeeming moment for the protagonist here. You can't do that. Yes, you have Leatherface is scary and he's coming to chainsaw everybody. Great, that's fine. You have to want to root for the people being hunted by him to beat him, right? You don't want to be, no one should be rooting for Leatherface, right? No one should be rooting for Jason Voorhees. No one should be rooting for Freddy Krueger. We like them because they're iconic and scary and they're manifestations of all our fears, but you shouldn't be rooting for them. And so that's in same thing in a comedy film, right? You have your protagonist, you have your antagonist. The one I think of, is Dirty Work with Norm Macdonald, where you hate the bad guy. Yes, Norm is a terrible person in that movie. He is. You hate him, right? You're like, this guy sucks. But he's also redeeming because the guy that he's up against is worse than he is. And so you're okay with that. And you want him to get the one-ups on there, you know? So, yeah. And that's how that happens.
Cool. Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I agree that Texas Chainsaw Massacre is great. The remake was not. I mean, having Texas Chainsaw Massacre set in Toronto to begin with was a mistake.
Oh, is that where they filmed the new one?
No,
I was
pretending. Toronto Chainsaw Massacre. But no, this is great. Thank you so much for having me on, man.
No problem. That's just a lumberjack movie, by the way. Toronto Chainsaw Massacre. It's just a lumberjack movie.
Yeah.
It's a lumberjack horror movie. Canadians, you need to make that movie. You need to make that movie. It's about a lumberjack who lost his land to eco people or whatever, or eminent domain, however you want to do it. And now he's getting back at them by chainsawing his way to the top of whatever. Like, there you go. There's your movie. You guys can write it.
It is actually not a bad idea. I would watch that.
I would watch the heck out of that. That sounds awesome, right? And after he says, and after he like kills somebody with a chainsaw, he goes, sorry. You know, like that would be funny. Like that, you're like, okay, this is hilarious. Like, I'm down to watch this. So there you go. I've just given the world a movie. Do what you want with it. Okay.
You're welcome.
Luke LaCoy, if you're listening to this, go write that. You already say sorry enough. You're Canadian. It has to come from you, sir. So there you go. And I will text Luke after this and say, hey, I have a movie for you to write. So we'll see what happens. John, thank you so much. Where can people find you? Where can they find any of your work and any of your stuff?
You can, again, don't slide into any DMs, but you can find me on Instagram, john.lonis. I'm Why Am I So Sleepy on Twitter. And hopefully you will see me headlining everywhere in your city sometime soon.
That'd be awesome. And I'll put all the links to all your stuff in the show notes as well for this podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. John, thanks for being here. Paul, thanks for connecting us. And everybody have a good one. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.